Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. This is a class of one equal protection case. The trial court improperly granted summary judgment for the defendant. The district court improperly weighed evidence, improperly resolved disputed facts, and improperly took genuine issues of material fact from the jury. In this case, Judge Young found a comparator to Fair's Pawn. The comparator was Parlor City Pawn. Once the comparator was found, then the issue shifts to whether there's a rational basis for the DFI deputy directors and the DFI director's decision.
So is it your view that any time a government agency treats two similarly situated persons or firms differently, that's a constitutional violation?
In a situation where there's a licensing.
Look, it can't be.
Excuse me?
Because it can't be. Government can't treat everybody equally. It isn't competent enough to do that, right?
But
one person gets a ticket for speeding, another person's speeding just as fast in the same place doesn't get a ticket.
Well,
is that a constitutional violation?
No, it's not. But
why
those
not?
Because those are situations where there's discretion. There's situations where there's in employment situations where the Supreme Court has ruled and this court has ruled that situations where there's discretion that the rational basis argument is not made. But in this case...
But there were different facts, quite different, because Fichter from, you know, Parlor City...
Yes, ma'am.
He signed that memorandum without delay. The memorandum specifying that he wouldn't employ that
the MOU.
Son. Yeah, the MOU.
My client agreed.
He agreed to, but he didn't. He didn't sign it for quite
a while. Your Honor, the evidence is that after the director decided not to grant based on delegated authority, the letter from Mr. Tarpey said specifically, respond to me in writing whether you want to go to the board and whether you will sign the MOU. He never asked him to sign the MOU. He never in any way instructed him to sign the MOU. My client did exactly what Mr. Tarpey asked him to do.
So am I wrong if I thought, reading the briefs, that Mr. Salwechter was presented with the MOU in September 2009, indicating that he would receive the license on the condition that he not employ Mr. Jones as the manager. So wasn't it within his power at that point to obtain the license by signing the MOU? I mean, isn't the delay that occurred after that point due to his own reluctance to agree that he wouldn't employ Mr. Jones?
That is incorrect. The letter says in the record on 844, should you wish to continue with the licensing process and have the application presented to the members of the department, you must confirm in writing your desire to pursue the application and indicate whether or not you agree to the terms and conditions of the MOU as proposed by the staff. And then at page 848, he says, I do intend to address the board. And then at the very bottom, he says, certainly, however, I will accept the MOU if all consideration for approving my application without it has failed. He stated clearly...
But did he ever prior to June 2010 actually sign the MOU?
The MOU was not presented to him until September, until after the delegated authority was not granted. He never had an opportunity to sign an MOU.
I think we're on two different tracks because he got that MOU in September 2009. He didn't sign it till June 2010.
He didn't sign it. Okay. Let me take a second here. The MOU was sent to him, and he was asked, will you agree to this? It was already said. If he had signed that MOU and sent it back, as you're saying, he didn't get a license in September of 2009. They said, will you agree to it? He was going to the board, period, whether he signed it or not. So the fact of the matter is, him signing the MOU in September of 2009 had no impact on the fact that this was going to the board. He said he would agree to it. He was never given a chance in 2009 to sign the MOU and get his license.
But,
those are the facts.
Yeah, well, I mean, he said, I'll accept the MOU if all consideration for approving my application has failed, but the sentence before it says, I would like to have the opportunity to employ Mr. Jones in a Christian-owned business. I mean, it certainly seems he still wants DFI to consider the application with Jones in the picture.
Ma'am, DFI was going to consider the application with Jones in the picture one way or the other. He was going to the board. The fact of the matter is, no matter what he did, no matter what his response was, he was going to the board. So had he signed that MOU, he was still going to the board. Had he signed that MOU, Jones still could have been a major part of the board's discussion. So he was never given an opportunity in September of 2009 to agree to have Jones not be an employee there and obtain a license.
What are you seeking by way? I mean, he got his license eventually. What are you seeking by way of damages?
Well, he had to hire a lawyer to go through the administrative process, which is the exact same damages that this court recognized in Ishmael that Mr. Ishmael was seeking. He in the pawn business, you obtain objects, and then if the person pawning the objects, or pledges, if the person pawning it does not return for that object, then you sell it for hopefully more than you gave the person. He for a long period of time, he was no longer able to obtain pledges, and he was just to buy sell. One of the main profit points of the pawning business is getting the objects and then being able to resell them, assuming that you know what you're doing, being able to resell them at a higher price. He was cut out of that. And, Your Honor, we hired an expert. We went through all the financial records, showed what his business did after he could start pawning, and we were, and it's in the record. The expert report is in the record, and he has, according to our expert, because of that 18th month, or it's probably a little bit shorter than that, because there was a reasonable period of time for him to get the pawn license. Let's say it's 14 months or 12 months, that he was damaged, and it's not an insignificant amount of money.
Was there evidence of what he made during the buy-sell, that period when he was in the buy-sell business?
Yes, that's in the expert report.
And the expert report suggests that is less than he would have made in the pawn.
Yes, sir.
Didn't DFI have reason to be concerned about Mr. Selwechter's application, not only in light of the prior problems at that address, but given his connection to Mr. Carroll, who, it certainly seems, had obtained a straw license on behalf of Mr. Kamouf? And that's part of the problem with the history at that location. There's this continuity and overlap from one rather unsavory character to another, from the Dukes to Jones to Carroll to the Camus to him.
Your Honor, first of all, the statute 28758 talks about a pawn applicant. It doesn't talk about a pawn building. A building doesn't pawn. A building doesn't...
I'm not talking about a building. I'm talking about the people.
Well, that's the location, and you did mention the location. But going to the people, whatever Sal Wester, whatever his connection was to them, He bought the building. He bought it. He thought it was basically an option, and they would come in and buy him out. Carroll was his attorney. And whatever the thought of him being an owner or being involved in this, once Evansville Upon applied for a license in 2007, that all went away. I mean, clearly, it was made clear to Mr. Sou'wester that Mr. Carroll bought the pawn business from the Dukes, and all Sou'wester was, and I mean all he was a landlord. He was not involved, and ma'am, I'm sorry, Judge. Mr. Schroeder and Mr. Tarpey both testified that they didn't believe that he was involved in the straw license.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Garn.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Garn?
Good morning. May it please the court. Summary judgment was warranted here. Bears Pond hasn't met its burden to establish that it can succeed on a class of one equal protection claim.
Ms. Garn, you say in your brief multiple times that although Mr. Sou'wester, I thought it was Wechter, but Wechter, I guess it's...
I believe it's pronounced Sou'wester.
Wechter, was presented with the MOU in September of 2009. And what you say is he, quote, apparently declined to sign it. What is with that apparently? Either he did or he didn't. I mean, are you equivocating on that point?
No. And as Your Honor pointed out correctly when you were discussing with Mr. Johnson, Mr. Sou'wester did not unequivocally agree to sign the MOU. As you pointed out, the letter at 442 of the appendix asks Mr. Sou'wester whether he's amenable to signing the MOU. He responded in writing. That's at page 848 of the appendix. He, as Your Honor pointed out, still expressed a desire to hire Jones, and then after that he didn't take any steps to sign the MOU. It is correct at that point that the application was going to go to the Board of Members. And as Your Honor also pointed out, given the history of the location, and not only that, but Mr. Sou'wester's affiliation with several of the parties that gave rise to that negative history, the very new director thought that it was in the best interest of the public that the application go to the Board of Members for full consideration. During the board meeting, and the transcript of that meeting appears at page 368 of the appendix. That's the beginning. Mr. Sou'wester gave the board several reasons for concern.
For what?
For concern. Concern that it wasn't appropriate to grant a license for a pawn shop
but
at that location.
Mr. Johnson was saying that Mr. Sou'wester expressed a willingness to the department and the board in September, and in the brief, I think it said October as well, not to employ Jones. So why did the board not grant him a license at that point based on that concession?
I don't think the record bears out the assertion that he expressed a willingness not to employ Jones. Again, he didn't equivocally agree after he was asked via the September 22nd letter. And then during the board meeting, he expressed a continued desire to employ Jones. For example, at page 409, 411, and 420, he explained that he thought Jones was qualified for the job and that he wanted to hire him. And at no point during that meeting did he say, I'll sign the MOU.
Was the objection to Jones being hired or just his being the manager? Objection on the part of the board?
It was his employment in general. The proposed MOU appears at page.
So when Sawechter eventually got his license, was it understood that he wasn't to hire Jones?
Yes.
So did he hire? Has he hired Jones?
No.
Pardon?
No, he has not. No. The MOU is at page 352. That's not a signed version, but it's undisputed that he signed an identical version of that memorandum. And two of the...
He signed an identical version of what? This is Sawechter's
film? Of the memorandum that appears at page 352 of the appendix.
And then he got his license?
Right, in the summer of 2010. But two of the provisions in the memorandum are, one, that Jones would not be employed in any capacity, mm-hmm. and that Mr. Sawechter would employ a manager with qualifications acceptable to the department and that relevant criminal background checks would be run.
What do you think a plaintiff in a class of one case has to prove in order to prevail?
Well, here, the starting point, the minimum showing is that Fares Pawn was intentionally treated differently from similarly situated pawn shops with no rational reason. But as Your Honor had pointed out before, the action on the part of the DFI involves discretionary determinations and evaluations of subjective factors. And to be clear, I wasn't asking the court to extend the Enquist prohibition, but as Your Honor pointed out, a necessary consequence of discretionary determinations, subjective decisions, is different treatment.
Well, Mr. Johns said it wasn't discretionary, that if he complied with the requirements for a license, he's entitled to a license.
Under the relevant portion of the statute, issuance of the pawn license is mandatory if the department determines that all of the requirements are met. But as
the department have said, all right, we think Jones is reformed, so we're going to allow Sawechter to employ him. Would that have been within the board's discretion?
Yes, the board and Mr. Mills initially is required to evaluate the character and the fitness of the applicant and any significant affiliates to determine that the business will be operated fairly, honestly, and efficiently. And so those are necessarily subjective determinations, the district court pointed out. Absent any questions from the court.
Well,
any other questions?
No, I did have another question because the Fares Pawn brief seems to suggest that DFI either knew or had reason to know of Jones' felony history when it approved Evansville Pawn's application. Could you speak to when DFI became aware of the true nature of Jones' criminal history?
Yes, Your Honor. DFI did not know of the true nature of Jones' criminal history until Mr. Sawechter's until Fares Pawn's application was pending. And I believe I cite to several instances where Mr. Tarpey and Mr. Schroeder state that in their sworn depositions. Mr. Johnson, I believe, is referring to a letter at page 679 of the record, which was from Linda Dukes to Mr. Tarpey in February of 2007 while Evansville's Pawn's application was being considered. And that letter states that Mr. Jones had a former charge that was amended to a misdemeanor. The department had been satisfied with Mr. Jones's conduct while he was manager at the predecessor pawn shop from 2004 to 2007. That's explained during the board meeting at page 423. At that point, DFI didn't see any reason to follow up on that letter. And at that point, the law didn't require first an examination into the background, the criminal history of a manager or an employee of an applicant for a pawnbroker license. The law was subsequently changed just prior to Fair's Pawns application. And there had been a state background check that was done on Mr. Jones during the pendency of the application, but that Indiana felony conviction didn't show up. So the department did not know of the true nature of Jones's criminal history until it was authorized to conduct FBI background checks in April of 2009. That's when the law became effective. And that background check revealed the Indiana conviction for conspiracy to commit theft and possession of materials used to manufacture methamphetamines. Both of those were Class D felonies and gave the department concerns reasonably.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you. The state defendants urge affirmance. All right.
So, Mr.
judgment.
Johnson, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute.
To answer your question, in February of 2007, Mr. Tarpey found out that Mr. Jones had a former charge which had been amended to a Class A misdemeanor. So he was on inquiry notice that there was a felony that came down to a misdemeanor. There's at least a material issue of fact as to whether he knew of the criminal, knew the extent of Jones's criminal background, and he clearly could have found out if it was important to him. Evansville Pawn applies for their license 7 months later and has Jones listed as the manager. So they clearly had the sufficient knowledge. To go back to your comment about the MOU, and I'll read it again, I will accept the MOU if all consideration for approving my application without it fail. And I'll conclude with this. When Mr. Mills obtained the damaging memorandum from Mr. Schroeder, Mr. Mills said, objectively notwithstanding, I believe it makes a compelling case for denial, explanation point. The law from this court in the Ishmael case is, if the power of government is brought to bear on a harmless individual because a powerful state or local official harbors a malignant animosity towards him, the individual ought to have a remedy in federal court. If you take objectively...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to Ms. Garner.